Support for WPR comes from Worm Farm Institute with the Farm Art Detour, a self-guided excursion through 50 miles of scenic farmland in rural Sauk County, October 5th through the 14th. WormFarmInstitute.org.
Support for WPR comes from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, with hands-on solar training for beginners and pros alike, at the Custer, Wisconsin campus or online anytime. MidwestRenew.org/training.
Well, don't let that unseasonably warm weather fool you. There's nothing that can stop it. Fall is on the way. It's the Larry Mueller Show on WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry today, and we're taking a look at the fall activities and festivals going on around Wisconsin with our guest, Ann Sayers. She's the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and we're also enlisting your support and help this afternoon as well as you tell us the highlights to hit across our state this autumn. At 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation today. That's 800-642-1234. You can always email us, talk@WPR.org. Where should we go this fall? Where can we hit the best places that we'll never forget? And where should we take our guests when they visit? Call us, 800-642-1234. Secretary Sayers, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Hi, Lee. It's so nice to be here.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about this. What is it about fall? And I think from my perspective, if you've ever lived somewhere that didn't have a fall and went straight from summer to whatever season that mild summer or straight from summer to winter, you realize how much you miss. What is it about fall in Wisconsin to you, Secretary Sayers?
Well, I could not imagine living somewhere that didn't have falls. It is one of my very favorite seasons. And there's just something about what happens at that turn from August to September and coming in through these first weeks of September where the sunlight gets just a little sparklier and the colors start coming forward and everything just gets a little cozy. And the flavors of the season, the arts, the entertainment, the corn mazes, all the things we get to talk about today, I just love to soak it all up.
Yeah, it's weird that we would anticipate it. We would almost push for it. And even though it's a little warmer weather today, I feel like we're ready for autumn, Secretary Sayers.
Oh, we are so ready. And Wisconsin, you know, we have this celebratory spirit all year long, but it really comes alive in fall. There's so many festivals and ways to just get out and experience it, spend time with loved ones, and take it all in. You know, we have a little saying that is, take in the fall leaves before the fall leaves.
Punny. I have listened to you with Larry Mueller before on this show, and I know that you have quizzed him with a little challenge called Fest or Fiction. Can you remind us what this quiz show is all about, Secretary Sayers?
Yes. So, Lee, you're going to have to play today. And, you know, Larry's pretty good at this game. He takes it pretty seriously. So we're going to see how you do. The idea here is that I'm going to name a festival, and it's your job to guess whether it's real or if I made it up. So is it a fest or is it fiction? And for the real festivals, I'm going to give you the details. And for those that are just a little too good to be true, I'm going to give you some details about a similar event that we host here in Wisconsin.
So, sounds good. Fest,
you ready?
Or fiction? Secretary Sayers, where would you like to start?
Okay, first one, the Nakusa Giant Pumpkin Fest. Fest or fiction?
I'm going to say there has to be giant pumpkin fests all around Wisconsin this time of year, and I'm sure you can find many more of them on Travel Wisconsin, so I'm just going to have to guess that Nakusa has one of their own. I'm going to call it a fest. What do you say?
You got it! Woo! The Nakusa Giant Pumpkin Fest is a fest. It's a gathering of giant gourds that are going to leave you in awe. It takes place in central Wisconsin in Nakusa, October 5th and 6th. You're going to marvel at massive pumpkins. I mean, massive. Skilled growers have been tending them all summer and fall. Some of them clock in as big as a ton.
What?
I can't even imagine. Kids love it. There's a pumpkin rolling contest. They get to pick, you know, the perfectly shaped pumpkin and roll it to cross the finish line first. Hopefully you can enjoy a car show. There's carnival rides. You can snack your way, of course, through the food court and so much more. And you got to make sure you stay for the signature moment of the festival. This is the most Wisconsin thing you can do. It's the pumpkin drop.
Oh,
Yep, a crane will hoist a massive pumpkin 100 feet up in the air and then, of course, release it, sending the pumpkin plummeting to the ground. And then a mass of spectators, they rush in and they collect the pumpkin seeds that come from the pumpkin's remains.
Considering the giant pumpkin fest, I can only imagine the giant pumpkin pie that must be a part in Nakusa.
Right? Right?
All right. So there's one for one there. What's next, Secretary Sears?
Nice work. Okay, next one. The Lumberjack Art Show. Best or fiction?
Okay, so my logic here, and see if you can't follow, is that I don't know. Sure, lumberjacks are artists with the work they do with their chainsaws. So is this art about lumberjacks, or is this lumberjacks creating art with their giant chainsaws? It could be either, and both seem very intriguing, Secretary Sayers. But I would, I'm just going to say fiction on this one because I'm imagining a bunch of lumberjacks creating watercolor paintings.
You got it.
Wow.
You got it. But what you just named sounds like a pretty good festival, so we should probably get started on that right away.
Sure. The Lumberjack Art Show is get ready for next year's fall festivities.
Exactly. This year, in the meantime, though, you can take in this combination of art and agriculture through an event called the Farm Art Detour. This event is put on by the Worm Farm Institute. It's a self-guided art tour, and it goes through the rolling farmlands of Sauk County. It's gorgeous. It's local and national artists. What they do is they install temporary sculptures and art displays in the fields and in the pastures and along these country roads. And that artwork can range from whimsical to really thought-provoking. This year, a record number of artists applied to participate in this farm art detour. And you can just cruise through the country in a car. You could also consider going by bike and take in all this artwork between October 5th and the 14th. In between stops, you can take some time to enjoy all those communities in Sauk County. You're going to find local markets, cozy restaurants, unexpected discoveries along the whole route. I always go, and it is such a fabulous event.
And that sounds amazing. But we're not done here with Fest or Fiction. What's next on your list, Secretary Sayers?
I'm worried about what Larry's going to say if you get all of these.
So. I'm going to try to get one wrong here, but you know, I'm really good at autumn. I'm just going to tell you now.
I can tell. Okay. The 26th annual Breakfast Sausage Jamboree.
This has to be real. Fiction. I'm sorry. No, it's got to be, because if it doesn't exist, we need to create it with all the sausage links, sausage patties, even some non-meat sausage varieties for those who are interested. All the sausage, breakfast sausages in one place in Wisconsin for fall. This has to be real, Secretary Sayers. Please make it real.
Oh, I'm so sorry. This one is fiction. You're right. It needs to happen. But in the meantime, we do have Bacon Bash. And that is happening in River Falls later this month. Celebrates all things. You guessed it. Bacon. It's happening September 27th and 28th. So here, food vendors from around the region are going to be setting up shop. Foodies are going to want to visit a sample and sample a variety of bacon wrapped, bacon topped, bacon infused, you name it, kind of dishes. Enjoy other themed activities. There's a bacon eating contest. You can take in live music. You can bring the family for kid-friendly activities and so much more at Bacon Bash.
I did not want to get that one wrong. I really didn't.
Sorry.
But I will certainly settle for a Bacon Bash. There is one more on our list, Secretary Sayers, and I want to get it wrong for Larry.
Okay. All right. Cornish Festival.
Well, no.
Or fiction.
That's not even fair. I know this is a fest because it's right down the road for me, and I look forward to it every autumn, from the pub crawl to the pancakes for breakfast. Cornish Festival's got to be the one in Mineral Point, right?
You got it. 3 of 4. Excellent.
Don't tell Larry.
I won't tell him. No, nobody tell Larry.
But we went through these, and I would certainly attend all of them, but I might not have written them down. Where will I find a list of these autumn events, Secretary Sayers, so I can keep track and make plans?
Yeah, you can learn more at travelwisconsin.com/fest or fiction. You can play the game and learn all there is to know about Wisconsin fall festivals.
Secretary Ann Sayers, our guest from the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and we're enlisting your support today to celebrate the oncoming autumn. What are your must-dos, must-sees, and must-goes? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@WPR.org. Sharon Lake Tomahawk, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am calling in regards to, we have autumn on Main Street on the 21st of September, which is obviously Saturday. Mm-hmm. We have 180 vendors who will be in town, many activities for the kids, and it goes from 9 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon.
And that's in Lake Tomahawk?
Correct.
And how long has this been going on, Sharon?
This is our ninth year.
Ninth year. And what's it been like to see this grow over the last decade or so?
Oh, it's been fantastic. It has grown every year. In fact, it gets to the point where we can't take any more people. Oh. As you know, Lake Tomahawk is a very small community.
Sure, very much, but also worth visiting, especially Saturday, September 21st. Sharon, thank you so much for calling. And Secretary Sayers, I've got to believe there are fall festivals in every community across the state, and we just need to find one that fits our drive and our plans. What's the best way to organize our affairs that way?
Well, I would start on travelwisconsin.com. One idea is to maybe check out the Fall Color Report. This is an amazing resource that's going to tell you, it's an interactive map, and it tells you where the color is. From 0% to peak, how color is performing across the state. It's updated by 80 volunteer reporters who are contributing regularly, so you can count on it to be accurate. So maybe take a look at where the fall color is and then begin to plug in, see what's going on in that community. TravelWisconsin.com is going to make that really easy for you. Plus, the fall color report's actually going to point you to nearby dining, lodging, activities, anything else you might need to start planning that trip.
And I see a couple of reports, Forest County and Merrill, Wisconsin, showing about 20% fall color already. Already? That was fast.
It's starting. And you know, If you've been on the fall color, it's very, very popular. It's like the most popular resource on our website because it's fantastic. But we've actually added some fun new things this year. You can use the new search bar to quickly look up a specific destination to see where the fall color is. We've also added points of interest to the map. So some really particularly stunning spots like maybe Eagle Tower in Door County or River Boat Tour along the Mississippi stand out. So you can start to play along with that. And there's also now a direct link to the trail report, another really popular resource. So you can pair up where you might take that fall hike and the condition of the trail that you're looking at meets the level of fall color.
TravelWisconsin.com is your resource. Let's go now to Appleton. John, good afternoon.
Hi, this is John Polakowski. I'm calling from to represent Unity of Appleton, a small spiritual group in Menasha, and we sponsor an International Day of Peace celebration, which we're housing at Pierce Park in Appleton from 1 to 4 this coming Saturday. It starts out with a peace torch presentation and a proclamation by the mayor, and then there's music and a presentation by Dina Eccles of a Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice, more songs, some storytelling, dancing, farmers market booths, food.
John, what time does it start on Saturday at Pierce Park?
1 o'clock. 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. It's from 1 to 4.
Why is this important?
Pierce Park, Appleton, Wisconsin.
Why is this important?
And celebrating the United Nations International Day of Peace.
Why is this important to you? Why is this important to the community of Appleton and Two Rivers there?
Well, it's important for the community of Appleton because we feel that promoting peace is a very positive thing to do. We found out about this from a sister spiritual community in Illinois who's been doing this the past couple of years, and we thought it was a good thing. This is our second annual event. It was very successful last year, and we'd like to just promote peace. We're not taking a political stance of any kind. We're just promoting the positivity of peace.
What could be wrong with that? Saturday starting at 1 at Pierce Park in Appleton. And John, thank you very much for the invitation. And Secretary Sayers, there is just so much more going on across Wisconsin than I believe even Travel Wisconsin can keep track of. But how can folks get listed on this website?
Oh, there's definitely, if you go to the events page, it'll direct you and how to list your event if it's not already listed. And we would love to see that. Like you said, there's practically more than we can keep track of. It's actually what we see in the research is that events are continuously, year after year, one of the top reasons people visit Wisconsin, the other one being outdoor recreation. And a lot of times festivals and outdoor recreation combine. So this is a reason people come to our state and spend their vacation dollars and contribute to our tax base and have a great time and make memories that last forever. So we want to make sure we're making that really easy for folks to do, which means those of you organizing events need to let us know. So we'd all be there on travelwisconsin.com, and we can get people out enjoying our beautiful, beautiful state.
Ann Sayers, our guest, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. We invite you to our conversation as well as we get ready for autumn and all that Wisconsin has to offer this time of year. Join us with your recommendations, and I understand you might have a special gem that you wouldn't want to share with just anybody. But this is Larry Mueller's audience here, so you're not sharing it with just anybody. You're sharing it with us. So let us know where you go this time of year and why it's so special to you. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us anytime, talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and you're listening to WPR News. You're listening to WPR News. It's the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and our guest is the Secretary of Tourism in Wisconsin, Ann Sayers. And we're getting ready for fall. And we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. When it comes to the changing colors, when it comes to the chilly weather, when it comes to fall, where do we need to go? What should we make sure we see? Where should we take our guests when they visit? Tell us at 800-642-1234, and we'll also get recommendations from our guest, Secretary Sayers. And Secretary Sayers, you mentioned the Eagle Tower in Door County is one of the best lookouts you will find anywhere across this country. And Eagle Tower has undergone some renovations over the last year or so, hasn't it?
It has, and it is just an absolute gem of our state. It is now fully accessible, so no matter your mobility needs, you should be able to get to the very top and have the spectacular view of the Bay of Green Bay from that lookout. And in the fall, the colors are amazing, and you may have actually seen it. It kicks off our 30-second campaign that is currently airing on airwaves across the Midwest. And it's also featured in what is called the Here's to Being Here travel series, which is a brand new kind of short form video series. It kind of feels like maybe something you might watch on HGTV, but it is all about traveling Wisconsin. And we encourage you to check it out. We feature a bunch of different places through the fall, giving you lots of ideas of how, as a family or as a couple or as a friends group, you might take in these destinations in Wisconsin. You can find that at Here's to Being Here on travelwisconsin.com.
Yeah. You mentioned the Door County Here's to Being Here video. The other one that I saw was about St. Croix Valley. How did Travel Wisconsin choose to feature these destinations?
Honestly, that is the hardest part of our entire job. We wanted to go deep. You know, we want to really show people what these destinations are like, which means we can't do the whole state at once. The plan is to eventually do the entire state. But we felt like St. Croix Valley just has so much to offer in terms of UTV trails. There's the Interstate State Park, which is our oldest state park, just a gem. The St. Croix River, Cascade Falls. So that one's really fun. It's a couple who build in a whole weekend. They're visiting from Minnesota, shows all the fun things they take in and do.
And across from the Green Bay, you've got another lookout tower that would be perhaps worth visiting as the leaves begin to turn, the Mountain Fire Lookout Tower overlooking Green Bay and Oconto County. Tell us about this.
One of the most breathtaking views in all of Wisconsin. It's a 100-foot tall former lookout tower. It's in the middle of the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest in Oconto County. You can hike to the top, and you are going to find this uninterrupted vista of the entire landscape. It is the only lookout tower in the National Forest that visitors can climb, and it's open until November 1st. So make your plans to get to Oconto County and check that one out.
Is there a charge for the Mountain Fire Lookout Tower?
I don't believe so, but you might want to Google it.
You got it. Let's go now to Michael in Madison, who joins us with his recommendations for autumn in Wisconsin. Michael, hello.
Hi there. I want to inform the listeners of a festival kind of or an event that's taking place this weekend. It's called the Green County Cheese Days.
Yes.
It's held in the city of Monroe, and it is only in even-numbered years. It's a three-day festival, I believe. They do have a parade around 12:30 on Sunday. And so anyone that likes cheese, that's the place to be this weekend.
We all love cheese. And was this always a biannual event, Michael?
I don't really know. This is only the third time that I'm going to it. Mm-hmm. So before I became retired, I was working a little bit too much. And so I can't give you the history of it.
Well, I'd be curious to know more, and always any excuse to visit Monroe would be good enough. And this weekend for Cheese Days, for all the cheese lovers, would be worth mentioning. Finding an excuse to eat cheese for the autumn season, Secretary Sayers, just sounds like a good idea.
Oh, Michael, I'm so glad you brought this one up. It is actually the oldest food festival in the entire Midwest, and it has everything, yodeling, alphorns, copper kettle cheese making, a beer garden, of course, cheese on a stick, everything you could possibly want. I'm so glad you mentioned it. Definitely one to check out. It's been happening since 1914.
Oh my gosh, over 100 years, and there'll be yodeling? I feel like that should have been mentioned, Michael. There should have been some...
Mary, the lead.
Well, no, cheese is the lead, clearly. Cheese is always the lead.
You're right.
And you can put it on a stick. You can put it in a fryer. It doesn't matter where you put it. It's going in my mouth this weekend. Oh, man, I appreciate the suggestion, Michael. Thank you for calling in. And we take yours as well at 1-800-642-1234. This is just too much fun. 800-642-1234. Email always available at any time. talk@wpr.org. We did get an email from Cliff here, who emailed us to share about the Northern Aged Iron Tractor and Threshing Show held September 21st and 22nd in Highbridge in northern Wisconsin. Says there's something for all ages, and if you love big machines and noisy tractors, that the Northern Aged Iron Tractor and Threshing Show is worth visiting September 21st and 22nd in Highbridge. Just another part of our history here in Wisconsin, Secretary Sayers.
Well, that one is new to me, so thank you to Cliff for bringing that to my attention. And yes, I do like loud things. That sounds like a lot of fun.
There are a couple other places that may be worth noting this time of year as the leaves begin to change and you're looking for beautiful vistas and sights to take in that you'll just never forget, the ones that remain even after you close your eyes. And one that comes to mind is in Price County, interestingly enough, Tim's Hill. What do we know about Tim's Hill in Price County, Secretary Sayers?
Yes, so this is the highest point in the state of Wisconsin. It has an elevation of nearly 2,000 feet. That's pretty good. And it's heavily forested surrounding it, so you get these spectacular views in the fall. There's an observation tower there, too, so sightseers can, like, look above the treetops and get that panoramic view.
And that's in the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest as well, isn't it? I think so.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
But again... Don't at me.
Don't at me. Just go to travelwisconsin.com and plan it for yourself and check out Tim's Hill when you get the chance. A little closer to southern Wisconsin, northwest of Milwaukee, is just this beautiful basilica that I did not even know existed until I found it at Travel Wisconsin, the Holy Hill Basilica, northwest of Milwaukee. Secretary Sayers, this looks like a place that is within a drive for me and worth visiting for sure.
You know, I have these moments all the time in this job where we feature a photo or a video and somebody says, I had no idea that was in Wisconsin. That doesn't look like Wisconsin. That looks like it could be, you know, somewhere in Europe. This is one of those places. The Holy Hill National Shrine of Mary is just beautiful. It was built over a century ago. It's a Romanesque church on a hill that was formed by the glaciers during the Ice Age. And the views are spectacular from Holy Hill. And it's located right next to the Kettle Moraine Scenic Drive. That's one that crosses six different counties and both units of the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And that's really a great one to center a fall weekend in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. And the Kettle Moraine, you take that path, you take that over the autumn, and there is a different experience than doing it over the summer, isn't there?
Oh, I know. It's like a completely different place. It's kind of a twofer. Worth taking in every season.
Absolutely. And can you climb the basilica? Is there a tower inside there in the Holy Hill Basilica?
You can get up and outside to a lookout, and I just don't have the details for when and how you can do that, but it is an option.
And the details are at travelwisconsin.com. Secretary yeah. Ann Sayre is our guest. And we're enlisting your support for the things that we must do this autumn at 1-800-642-1234. And Secretary Sayre, we got an update here from Glenda about this weekend's cheese days in Monroe. Glenda says not only will there be cheese on a stick and cheese in a fryer and cheese any number of different ways, not only will there be yodeling, but with your help, they're hoping to break the world Guinness record for the number of people polkaing at one time. So, break out your polka gear, get your polka shoes, and get down to Monroe this weekend so you can be part of a potential Guinness World Record.
That's something that's going to register on the Richter scale.
Well, I guess that depends on how well you poke as Secretary Sayre.
Yeah, I guess so.
You can email us, talk@WPR.org. We also have another email here saying we cannot forget about Oktoberfest in La Crosse. It is the last weekend in September. We were just up in La Crosse last week, Secretary Sayre, for the Larry Mueller Show. They did a live broadcast from La Crosse, and we were heading on up from Madison and the UW campus where we broadcast from. And I was just ready to get on the interstate and just get there. And I was driving with Tyler Ditter, another technical director for the show, and he's like, let's take the scenic route. Let's take Route 14 all the way to La Crosse.
Oh, I bet that was beautiful.
It was maybe an extra half hour of a drive, but it was also that experience. It was also the views. It was also the beginning of the changing of the leaves. And it was just it was not the interstate. It was Wisconsin.
It's a vibe. I know.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely a vibe. And one that you feel this time of year that doesn't just come with a chill, but comes with a cozy blanket to surround yourself with. I just love that.
Maybe a warm chai or apple pie along the way.
Oh, yes.
Sounds like you did it just right.
There's one more place to hit here that I want to make sure we share with folks who are interested. Perot State Park in Trumbull County. This park evidently has some fall colors that are not to be missed.
Yes, and I don't want this one to ever be overlooked. It is spectacular. 1,200 acres of scenic riverside hills and bluffs. You can hike the trails and get to the top of a nearly 500-foot tall bluff, so you have vistas of the whole Mississippi River Valley and all those surrounding wetlands. And the hike, it is a little steep, but the Brady's Bluff East and West trails are great options for a rewarding view at the end if you're looking for something a little less challenging.
And this is overlooking the Mississippi. Do you get views of the river from there?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And that's not too far from La Crosse, that if you are in that area, it would be worth taking the day to go see what you could see.
Agreed.
Travel Wisconsin, our guest, Secretary Ann Sayre, is joining us from the Department of Tourism in Wisconsin and taking your recommendations for what this fall has to offer across our state at 800-642-1234. Larry in Kingston, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm just have a shout out for Ripon, Wisconsin. Ripon has the most magnificent trees in their older neighborhoods, and you don't even have to get out of your car to enjoy it.
And where are the leaves right now in Ripon? Where would you say, Larry? Has it started to turn? Are we just about getting started?
No.
Not yet.
Nothing happening yet.
Not yet. So we've got some time to prepare and make a plan to get out to Ripon to see the color, changing colors of the old trees that you have there.
Oh, yeah. They're just fantastic.
I appreciate that, Larry. And as far as the road trips go across Wisconsin, I feel like after last week's trek up Route 14, you can really do no wrong this time of year, Secretary Sayers.
Oh my gosh, you really can't. I love that we got our shout out for Ripon today. Mm-hmm. We needed that. And to keep an eye on the fall color report so you can see when those leaves start. I think it's probably, how it starts with that, just like a little bit of burnt edge on the leaf, and then it goes from there. So yeah, anywhere you go, we're going to start to see it here pretty quick.
Yeah, we saw some on the ride home from La Crosse last week, and it was just a few patches here, a little look of red or yellow there, but it's starting now. And again, Travel Wisconsin's a resource for you and visitors this time of year when you're looking for what to do for fall and where to go. And we're taking your suggestions. Evidently, I have another update because we're going to be setting a Guinness World Record for polka dancing in Monroe this weekend. Our technical director, Jeff Robbins, informs me that the current record for number of people polkaing was set in 2013 in Germany, and it was 802.
Oh, we can beat that.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to hear. 802?
Oh, sure.
That's nothing. We can get 805 in Monroe this weekend. What do you say?
Absolutely.
We'll make sure that the yodelers are also doing the polka dancing. Everybody making cheese will come over and do a little dance.
Heck yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, would you be judged for your polka dancing? Is there a formal way you have to polka in order to be counted by Guinness Book of World Records?
I would think it would count if you're just giving it your best.
Just do your best. 800-642-1234. Secretary Ann Sayers having fun with this fall's things to do across Wisconsin. And we still have time for you and your suggestions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email us, talk@WPR.org. And we'll wrap up the hour with your recommendations with what to do this fall when we continue on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News. Coming up tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show, we have an insect update from entomologist Phil Pelletieri, who joins us, and we'll also be talking about house centipedes. Do you have them? Do they make your skin crawl? Let's talk about them. That's tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show, starting at 11. Right now, our guest is the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, Ann Sayers, and we're taking your recommendations for the best of autumn across Wisconsin at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. Richard in Rockdale, good afternoon.
Hi, excellent show. I was driving, and I got my mind drifting all over Wisconsin, and I wanted to share this with you. Watch the color map, and when the colors get really good in central Wisconsin, I highly recommend a trip up 5139, which gives you a variety of changes in scenery and vegetation types and whatnot. Get up to Stevens Point, take a right on 66, and go east into ultimately Waupaca County. It's a beautiful drive. Get to nearing Iola. And this is a shout out to all the Norwegians listening in. at Northland Lutheran Church, there is a fantastic lutefisk meal. And it starts early, like 1 o'clock or something, 2 or so, and goes till evening. Go early. And it's just surrounded by beautiful fall colors. And as you proceed from there and make your way through Waupaca County, trying to make your way back, the roads are winding and surrounded by the most beautiful trees, and it is just exquisite. So you can not only enjoy the color of Wisconsin, you can feast on lutefisk on the way.
And the when is that lutefisk dinner, Richard?
It's something like that. I didn't look it up. It was mid-October.
I've got October 19th on my calendar, and thank you by prefacing it for the Norwegians, because nobody else would probably be interested in lutefisk, but certainly...
Well, let me spread the wealth here a little bit. You don't have to eat lutefisk. In fact, when I sat down, all dressed in my Norwegian uniform, the people across from me were not only not Norwegians, they weren't even Lutherans, and they were enjoying the meal. But by the time they got done, they knew all about lutefisk and Norwegian here in Wisconsin. And they ate whatever the other entree was, some pork, I think it was. It was pretty good. It was all good. And,
oh, yeah.
And really nice people. I assure you, you will leave the doors a better person.
Absolutely, every time. And I understand they'll have lefse too. And for those who are unfamiliar, absolutely worth the trip. Richard, for the record, I eat my lefse with butter and brown sugar. I know that's not traditional.
Raised.
I appreciate the call. Secretary Sayers, that was not just a road trip, that was an actual route to take to make your way to a lutefisk dinner October 19th in Waupaca County.
I just love how Richard explained all of that, the winding roads, how you're sort of getting into a more rural area, you're landing in a destination that is a cultural experience, but also welcome to anyone and everyone. And everything he explained is something that, like, we would summarize as Wisconsin's brand nature. And that's something that we're trying to always bring to the potential visitor. They have all the options in the world of where they might take a road trip this fall. And we want to make sure that Wisconsin is at the top of their list. And I think everything Richard described is exactly why Wisconsin should be at the top of the list.
I love that. And I want a map to draw out so I could take that actual route and then make my way back again after that lutefisk dinner. I just think it's great. Richard, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Illinois now for a recommendation for autumn in Wisconsin. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I would like to recommend Port Washington, Wisconsin, which is a little bit north of Milwaukee, maybe about a half an hour, 45 minutes north. It's right on the waterfront, so that you can take beautiful walking paths there if you like. There's a wonderful cathedral to see, and my husband and I have gone there biking often. There's an interstate bike trail that goes all the way to Sheboygan. It's very nice. It's an easy ride for people. The colors are gorgeous in the fall, and it's one of our favorite things to do. It's really not that far for people who live in Chicago or the northern suburbs for a lovely weekend. There's also a couple of jazz festivals there in the fall as well.
Awesome. Susan, thank you so much. And Secretary Sayers, when did Wisconsin become such a mecca for bikers? Susan mentioned that bike path that goes from Port Washington to Sheboygan, that goes along the lakefront trail at times, and it's just beautiful and special, but it almost seems like Wisconsin became a biking destination, I don't want to say overnight, but very quickly.
I'm so glad you brought that up. We really are. And I think it's partly just that our natural landscapes lend themselves well to the kinds of places you want to hike, whether it's along one of our two great, or to bike, along one of our two great lakes, 15,000 inland lakes. 50% of our state is covered by forests, these like rolling hills of the Driftless, the Kettle Moraine, the Shawamigan Nicolet. Like, it's just, there's so much to explore, and on a bike is a great way to do it. But there's also a lot of nonprofits and government investment along the way that has tried to make those paths really accessible to folks. And, you know, we actually are, in terms of all of outdoor recreation, we have the fourth largest number of manufacturing jobs in the country. So that includes things like Trek and other bicycle manufacturers and so many other outside of biking. You know, we have Harley and Polaris and Mercury Marine and St. Croix Rods and so many outdoor businesses that have made Wisconsin their home because we are such a great state for outdoor recreation.
Secretary of Tourism Ann Sayers, our guest, and we still have time for you at 1-800-642-1234. What would you recommend we hit up this fall across Wisconsin? 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. Email here from Mary in Wausau. She says, the Monk Gardens has a blossom of lights. It's Wednesday through Saturday evening, September 18th through October 26th. That's the Monk Gardens with Blossom of Lights in Wausau, going on starting September 18th all the way through October 26th. Paul emailed us to share about the Hidden Studios Art Tour. That takes place October 4th, 5th, and 6th. It's a tour of working studios across central Wisconsin along the Ice Age Trail. And you can explore the winding roads, the quaint communities, the hidden fine art studios during a peak fall foliage weekend. There are 8 studios combined and 23 artists who will be waiting for you for the Hidden Studios Art Tour October 4th through 6th across central Wisconsin on the Ice Age Trail. And got a call here from Rachel in Red Cliff to say, don't forget about Hoops Dockside up in Bayfield. They're catching and selling fresh fish, and it doesn't matter the weather. It's always beautiful there. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
It doesn't matter where you are in Wisconsin. Secretary Sayers, it's always beautiful there.
All of these suggestions are so fantastic, and I love that we mentioned Hoops Dockside. That ability to eat your fresh-caught fish right there on the dock is such an experience. Definitely make sure that you have a chance to get there.
Perfect. When I'm thinking about food this time of year and fall foods, I start thinking about cranberries, Wisconsin's state fruit. But what can I do with cranberries this time of year? What's there for me to see or participate in? Can I dive into a bog somewhere?
Yeah, how have we made it this far without talking about cranberries?
Sure.
Well, let's start in Warren's. There you can discover a destination, learn about taste and shop and everything about cranberries. The Discover Cranberries is part cafe, part gift shop, part museum. This is in Monroe County. The cafe prepares breakfast and lunch dishes. They have sandwiches. They're served on cranberry rice bread. Hmm. And you can make room for ice cream, too. They have they have varieties like cranberry cheesecake, cranberry delight. The lower level of Discover Cranberries houses a museum, so you can learn more about the fruit's rich history. You'll find informational displays, historic artifacts that tell the history. And before you leave, you can check out the gift shop, too, which has all kinds of cranberry items. And there's more places, too, to jump into some bogs, buy some gifts, enjoy all that cranberries have to offer.
I have to admit, I'm afraid I'm a little bit of a cranberry Luddite. The extent of my cranberry knowledge is opening up the can and plopping it out on the plate.
No.
It's not great.
That's not right.
I'm not proud.
No, we need to get you to the Warren's Cranberry Festival. That's happening September 27th through the 29th this year. This is a massive gathering of food vendors, artists, craftspeople, and real cranberry lovers. And maybe they can teach you a thing or two.
Yeah, I don't understand how I've gone this long in Wisconsin, and all I know is a can opener when it comes to cranberries. That's just not right and needs to change. Fortunately, I don't have to go very far to learn a little bit more. Go back to your recommendations now with the time we have left at 800-642-1234. John and Spooner, good afternoon.
Hello, Larry. I wanted to mention a place called Buena Vista Park just east of Alma on the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
It is amazing. I was going to call in on Holy Hill Park, but you had already mentioned that because I've been there many times. But this Buena Vista Park just east of Alma is, if you want to see what an eagle sees as it flies over the Mississippi, that's the place to do it.
Oh, what's eagle watching like in the springtime there?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. But in the fall, when you get up to this park,
yeah,
you're on top of the bluff looking straight down at this town of Alma and over the river and Lock and Dam there. And you're so far up. The houses in Alma look like they're from a Monopoly board.
Buena Vista Park, outside of Alma. I've got it on the list, John, and I thank you for adding to it. Secretary Sayers, up and down the Mississippi, you're going to find those bluffs to visit and the places that you're going to want to take others to visit.
I mean, the Great River Road is the ultimate fall travel destination. Mm. And you're going to find, yes, many places like the Buena Vista Park. They actually have the largest natural balcony overlooking the Mississippi River. And the views are just stunning, as John said.
Let's go to Dave in Lake Tomahawk. Dave, good afternoon. What do you have for your fall recommendations?
Well, you know, the Turtle Flambeau Flowage up in northern Wisconsin. And the birch trees turn yellow, the maples turn red, yeah, and you have the contrast of the green pines. There's Bayfield is an easy drive from there. That's a beautiful area to go to. And if it's not frozen over, if you're not too late, there's a ferry that takes you over to the Apostle Islands, and you can drive that, and it's just absolutely amazing.
Oh, I that's perfect and pretty much ties all of northern Wisconsin together with one trip that you can make, including a ferry ride to the Apostle Islands, Secretary Sayers.
One of my favorite things to do. Mm. Yep, and check out Madeline Island. There's so much food and culture to take in, arts. It's one of those places. I mean, I think we all have this feeling when we get to northern Wisconsin, which people always ask me, where is it? And I always just say, you'll know when you get there. But you just have this feeling, this relaxation that comes out, like that big exhale, and everything you just named, the Turtle Flambeau Flowage, is just a spectacular thing that other states don't have things like that.
Right.
We're really, really lucky. And of course, no one has Apostle Island. So really, really good suggestions there.
Now, lots of states have farms, but few do farms in the fall the way Wisconsin does. And I do believe there has to be a farm in just about everybody's backyard where they can go visit to celebrate the harvest this time of year, Secretary Sayers.
That's exactly right. And this year we have a little something different planned because we have coming up in the spring, the 2025 NFL draft. And it's been really cool to see these farms getting in on the fun by having themed corn mazes. So you can, it's crazy. Porter's Patch, this is one in Shawano County. When you're in the maze, you can look for 32 different scarecrows that are dressed up as NFL players inside the maze. The maze at Polly's Pumpkin Patch, this is one in Calumet County. They work a goat and a pig into the maze design. So you can be sure to browse their selection of over 40 pumpkins and gourds of all shapes and sizes and colors too. The 2025 NFL draft themed corn mazes, something to look for, do something a little different this year.
I didn't even consider it, but it makes a lot of sense considering the NFL draft's going to be taking place next spring right there in Green Bay, where the center of the football world will be focused. So why not celebrate it with a little corn maze or two before we get there and a few scarecrows dressed up as our favorite NL Central opponents.
Right, exactly.
That's perfect. There is another corn maze that sounds a little bit, I don't know, like you might never leave. It's in Rock County. I saw this as a sort of a mix between an escape room and a corn maze. Can you tell us more about it?
This one's new to me too. I can't wait to check it out. It's in Janesville. It's Skelly's Farm Market. They've unveiled now a new escape room style game that you can play while you're navigating their corn maze. It's a 6-acre adventure maze. It's going to send you on a mission to help find, and I love this, apple cider donuts.
Yes.
That were stolen from fictional characters called Squashies. So you'll solve puzzles as you wind your way through the maze, and that gives you clues. Once you've collected enough clues, you'll be able to unlock an actual door in the maze to identify the donut thief. And it's a family activity everyone's going to love doing together.
I noticed they didn't make Lutefisk one of the awards in the corn maze.
Yeah, no, donuts.
Apple cider donuts, no less, and you can make your way through. I was wondering, do they have like a drone or something that they can put up top to make sure that everybody's getting through or nobody's left behind at the end of the night?
I don't know how they do it, but I'm certain it is safe and family friendly.
Another thing this time of year, and we'll all benefit from it. And I remember doing this as a kid, is hitting up one of the apple orchards and doing a little apple picking, going home and making any number of apple pies, apple sauces, apple butters, apple everything for the season. Where should we turn to find our favorite orchard, Secretary Sayers?
Yeah, well, you're going to find them all over, but one suggestion is Ferguson's Orchard. That's near Galesville in Trempealeau County. It's really interesting. They are the Midwest's largest grower of Pizzazz apples, and Pizzazz apples are a mysterious cross between the Honeycrisp and an unknown apple variety. They say that they have a crispy texture, a balance of sweet and tart flavor, so I feel like that's worth the trip. You got to figure that out.
Pizzazz apples. Now, I know the Honeycrisp was an invention from Minnesota. Is the Pizzazz apple a Wisconsin native, do we know?
I don't have any notes on that, but I have to assume something as cool as a Pizzazz apple is from Wisconsin.
We're just going to claim it as our own.
Yeah, we got this.
We've got the Pizzazz apples, and that was in Trempealeau County again, at Ferguson's Orchard.
That's right. And when you're there, there's going to be wagon rides. There's a giant inflatable pumpkin jumping pad, a sand pit, a corn kernels, barnyard games, and so much more.
What's it like for you with all this knowledge in your head about everything happening in Wisconsin and everything coming up in Wisconsin with the NFL draft? What's a day in the life of Secretary Sayers like?
I mean, I just feel like I'm constantly adding to my bucket list every single day. You know, I make no progress. I just think of, I see and hear of more things that I want to take in. And actually, so many of the callers today named some things that I've added to my list too. So, I mean, it's just, we're very, very lucky in Wisconsin that the gifts just keep coming. And there's so much more to explore and discover.
What's the best way for me to plan to hit up the best color this fall? Where will I find where to go?
Yeah, I think start on travelwisconsin.com and you'll find the Fall Color Report, the Here's to Being Here series, and so many more ways to get inspired.
Sounds great. And Secretary Sayers, thank you so much for joining us today. Looking forward to the fall.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one, everyone.
Ann Sayers, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, joining us with a look at all the recommendations available for us this autumn across Wisconsin. And thanks to Secretary Sayers for joining us. Coming up, we're going to be taking a look at what it takes to be an Olympic athlete, what it takes to fail and fail again until finally you succeed. Where does success come from the mindset of those who are the very best? What are they thinking when they start to the time they get there to the very top? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to WPR News. I have to learn from Simone Biles, perhaps the greatest gymnast of all time, and here I am who would struggle just to do a somersault. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News. And we're taking a look at the Olympic mindset and how we can apply that to our own everyday just getting through the live long day. Our guest is Dr. Shyla Merghain. Dr. Merghain's a distinguished psychologist at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She's also a sports psychologist to UW-Badger student-athletes. So what advice would you give a friend with a huge challenge in front of them? How have you built confidence in yourself to go out and do what you got to do each and every day? Where do you see similarities, parallels between those who are at the very top of being the very best and those of us who are just getting through another day? 1-800-642-1234. What does Simone Biles have to teach me? 800-642-1234 to join our show or email us anytime. talk@wpr.org. Dr. Merghain, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thanks so for having me, Lee. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and so I'll just start with that big question. I look at, you know, Simone Biles, who does things that you would not expect a human body could ever do when she does them regularly, and I think, wow, that is amazing to see. I wonder how she does that. But then I stop and think, I wonder how she does that. How do you prepare yourself to jump into the air in ways that no other human can really do? What do you do to get ready for something like the Olympics, Dr. Merghain?
It's such a great question. And although the Olympics are over, the lessons learned and about the Olympic mindset is really timeless. And, you know, there is so much to learn from how the Olympians train, not just physically, but even more important, mentally. And maybe, you know, you are or myself are not going to compete on an Olympic stage, but we can have an Olympic mindset to allow us to go for gold in our own lives.
So where does that start? And does that start with the idea that I can? Does that start with eliminating doubt? Does that start with the little voice inside you and training that voice to be part of your cheerleading squad? Where would I begin?
Absolutely. One of the things that the Olympic athletes all have in common is they believe in their potential. And this is a great thing to instill in our children. And no matter what our age, we can really work on moving in the direction of our potential. We research backs this up. We know that we all have more capacity for lifelong learning and brain development than we ever thought. And the Olympians, and again, we can instill this in ourselves, our children, if we believe that our potential is unknown, we're more willing to develop that stick-to-it-ness. We're more willing to challenge ourselves the way Olympic athletes do. We're more willing to take risks and stretch ourselves and getting excited about the growth that we can accomplish. And I think recognizing potential can be very motivating. One of the things I tell my daughter is her job, she's only 2.5, but I always say her job is just to move in the direction of her potential, to move in the direction of her potential. And again, if we really instill this, if we start to cultivate this, people are much more likely to tolerate the discomfort that goes along with working towards one's potential, growing outside one's comfort zone, making mistakes, having failures, but getting back up and continuing to work towards that goal.
Yeah, from the perspective of an athlete who has attained some level of success, what does that path towards success look like? How much success is included in that path until they get to the top? And how much failure is a part of that path, Dr. Merghain?
That's a great question. Failure is along for the ride. You know, we saw it definitely with Simone Biles in Tokyo and how she had to really work on her mindset. You dug into therapy. She addressed some of those earlier traumas. She worked on the power of her thinking and having more self-supportive thoughts and addressing some of that self-doubt, that lack of confidence, that fear of failure. So again, when we think about growth as a goal, we become a little less afraid of failure. A mistake, a setback, or even failure, on some level, doesn't even mean that much. It's just one moment in time. Instead, we work on, if there is a mistake, what did I learn from it? What can I do different? How can I grow from this? How can I stretch myself? And I love the word yet. Maybe I haven't done it yet, but that doesn't mean I can't eventually do it. So that belief that at first, if you don't succeed, you probably, you know, you're going to do it eventually, or at least learn something in the process. And we know when we, again, think about it in our own lives, and maybe many listeners can relate to this, or in our children, often if they're not succeeding at something, they give up. We see this, there's some gender differences, for example, in solving math problems. We see young boys have a little more stick-to-it-ness around adolescence and working through those hard math problems, while girls tend to, in generality, give up more quickly. And so that sense of continuing to try again, can be really important. And again, when we look at an Olympic athlete, when we're not seeing her all those years of toil and training, all those years of getting back out there and trying again, and those qualities can be developed. Again, when we think about how I am today, there's a lot that can change over time if I'm willing to work at it. And I think that's the second quality that an Olympic mindset has, is hard work.
Hard work. Yeah, it does not come easy, and it does not come out without a long line of what would be considered lessons. If you learn from them, that's how you turn them in from failures, I'd imagine, to something that you could adapt and evolve from. But you'd mentioned confidence and doubt, and Dr. Mergain, where do you draw that line in your best mental health state? How do you define, you know, your own confidence and belief in yourself, and how do you weigh that doubt that, as you mentioned, even someone like Simone Biles may have walking onto a mat before competing?
Well, confidence is a skill. It's not something we're born with that just appears out of thin air. Instead, it is directly related to the kinds of thoughts that we're saying to ourselves. And athletes have two things. They have self-encouraging thoughts, and they also have thoughts that really focus on kind of instructional talk, what they need to do. So when we look at self-talk, I think the Olympic athletes are able to bounce back from mistakes quickly because they recognize them for what they are. They're mistakes. They don't internalize them or say it as a big thing about who they are and what's possible. Athletes really monitor what they're thinking and saying to themselves, and they learn to replace the doubts by focusing on the task at hand. So one of the things when I'm working with my athletes and worked experientially on the field or court or rink or or wherever they're competing, I have them identify what thoughts get in the way. And I often refer to those thoughts as NATs, N-A-T-S, which stands for negative automatic thoughts. And we have some fun with it. We'll actually have them speak out loud those NATs, those negative automatic thoughts. I'll write them down on a post-it note. And we've even gone to having them put those post-it notes on them while they're engaging in their sport, whether it's hitting a baseball, serving a volleyball, shooting a hoop, catching a football, or just running, et cetera, or skating on the ice. We've done it in a lot of different ways. And what happens is they recognize that those are just thoughts. They're just gnats. So in the same way, if you and I were talking and I had a gnat flying around, I could spend all my time swatting the gnat, getting frustrated about the gnat, trying to catch the gnat, trying to get that away. And I wouldn't be focusing on our conversation or who I want to be in the process. So with athletes, and I think the Olympic athletes do this really well, they understand the habits of their mind. They understand those gnats or negative automatic thoughts that get in the way, and they don't take them so seriously. So in psychology, there's a concept called cognitive diffusion. Not every thought we think is true. We have so many thoughts, and a lot of thoughts are repetitive and negative and kind of doom and gloom, what's wrong. So that notion of diffusion is you just notice there's a thought. Okay, you know, there's a self-doubt. Oh, there's that thought. You're a failure again. Hello, thought. And then you get back in the moment. You get back in the zone, and you just take action. So instead, I think Olympic athletes and for ourselves, we can replace that thought. That negative thought can be there, but then focus on, what can I say to myself that's encouraging? Yeah,
Dr. McGee, your relationship with your inner voice seems very productive. I think sometimes I think of my relationship with my inner voice as almost combative, like, shh, quiet down now. I'm trying to do this thing that I doubt that I can do. But you are allowing these negative automatic thoughts to come in, acknowledge, and let go, and not have to dwell or have to wonder about whether or not this means that your actual actions will be not good enough or won't succeed.
That is such a great summary, Lee, of the kind of befriending the mind, understanding the habits of our thinking, and not getting so hooked by these thoughts that are the feel of failure, the doom and gloom, the what if could happen. And instead, focusing your mind on what would feel encouraging, supporting, promoting peace, what would be helpful in this moment. I think a place of personal power in athletes and in our lives is just focusing on, what do I need to do next? What do I need to do next? And in that process, I always encourage my athletes, how do I want to show up?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of value, quality, you know, the goal isn't necessarily always to win gold, but it's more about kind of who you're becoming along the way. You know, each moment is an opportunity to engage in some joy. I remember when I climbed a mountain recently, the guide said, the goal isn't to get to the top. Every moment you're climbing is part of that experience. So enjoy every step. And I think sometimes in our culture, we focus so much on the outcome versus the process.
The finish line and not the trail itself.
Exactly.
And, and if you just focus on the finish line, you may never get there. Whereas if you focus on each step at a time, you're more likely to find success at the end of wherever you're going. And this all of a sudden begins to apply to me in a way that I didn't think was even possible, because the thoughts that you think every day are the thoughts that we all think. It's kind of a universal experience of being human, right? But how do those who succeed the most, the athletes that we see as the epitome of success, how do they gather their thoughts? What's their relationship with their thoughts? And are they friends with their thoughts? And this seems to be a different an opportunity to create a different relationship with yourself, Dr. McGain.
Absolutely. And I think you just summarized it so well, that athletes don't take those fear thoughts so seriously. And instead, this notion of fear is along for the ride. Learning anything new is going to be outside your comfort zone, and it's often uncomfortable. Anytime we try something for a first time or second time, it's very uncomfortable. But I think Olympic athletes make friends with that fear. They know what fear looks like in competition. They know it's along for the ride. And it's not something to avoid, but it's something instead to just be with, knowing they can use it to help them fuel us for a goal. So, you know, I think of a student starting maybe a new school, or for us starting a new job, or maybe we have to give a difficult presentation, or having a hard conversation, or maybe we're just learning a new hobby. All of that can feel a little uncomfortable as we're starting out, not so great at it. But again, if we recognize, oh, you know, this is me, this is just a feeling of starting something first. This is just a feeling of going outside my comfort zone. So it might be uncomfortable now, but down the road, and we can think about past successes of something we started at and in the end turned out well or better than expected. So we know in the end, it will get a lot easier. But again, that stick-to-itness is really important.
And this brings me back to the balance between confidence and doubt, and whether or not there could be too much self-confidence or irrational self-confidence, and whether or not that could have a negative effect on outcomes. I go back to finding a good balance within yourself between confidence and understanding of your own abilities, doctor.
Absolutely. You know, I think an important point in all my years of practice is, deep down, everyone kind of feels like they're not enough. And and that can be liberating.
Thank you.
You know, many people can have bravado or they look like everything's together. But if you look at the core, and I think it's partly how society has raised us, I think it's also on some level, we can't be all things, you know. And if you look at even Simone Biles, right, she didn't win gold in all her events.
Right.
So even somebody at the peak of their game, there is a lot of imperfection. And so I think it can be liberating to recognize that the common humanity of feeling that, and that even with that feeling, maybe even with that truth, we can still do a lot. So instead of focusing on what I'm lacking, people, I think the shift is to focus on what we can do, what is possible, what we want to do, what does fuel us, and focus there.
And the focus, as you mentioned, from athletes when they have to get up and dust themselves off and get back at it is what's the next action? What can I do next that will provoke the greatest amount of success? How do I achieve my goals and what can I do to get there? Dr. Shyla Mergane is our guest, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She also is a sports psychologist for UW-Madison athletes. When we're taking a look at the Olympic mindset, what it takes to win gold and how we could all apply that in our own lives, the relationship we have with that inner voice within ourselves. What questions do you have about that relationship with your inner voice? What would you like to know from Dr. Mergane about what how athletes use their inner voice to fuel themselves to success? And how can we apply this in a way that works for all of us effectively? 800-642-1234 to join our conversation. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller on WPR News. It's the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and our guest is Dr. Shyla Mergane, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, also a sports psychologist for some of the UW-Madison's student-athletes. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What do you want to know about what it takes to get that Olympic mindset and how you can use it to get through your everyday in a way that makes you feel like you've attained some sort of success at the end of the day? 800-642-1234, or you can email us talk@WPR.org. Dr. Mergane, I noticed early last week that Fox Sports was setting up their stage on the UW-Madison campus. They hosted their live football pregame show on Saturday before the Alabama football team came to town, the storied football franchise for college football. And, you know, the Badgers came up very, very short on Saturday. I'd be curious to know from your perspective how you go into what was the big, big show this weekend in our backyard here in Madison, and how you get student athletes ready for what is all eyes on you.
It definitely can be, especially for those incoming freshmen, a leap from the pond into the big ocean and the visibility. And there is a lot of pressure on our UW athletes, and our incredible institution really values well-being and mental health of our athletes, that any athlete can have access to either an in-house or community provider providing psychological services. And I think many athletes are so appreciative of having that resource. I think there is tremendous pressure. There is, the social media, the national coverage of games that. And for many athletes, there is also this sense of having to prove themselves and anxiety that needs to be addressed. But again, I think there are wonderful resources to help our athletes deal with sports-related anxiety or other challenges that go in playing at this level.
But it's still the same game that you were playing as a kid. It's still the same rules that you had in high school. So what's changed is nothing that's on the field. But how do you make sure that that goes into your head or is drilled into your thought process by the time Saturday kickoff comes around?
One of the things that I think has been so unique about UW-Madison is the extensive mindfulness training that our athletes are receiving. We have Chad McGee, who's the director of mindfulness, I think one of the only or few in the nation. And there is mindfulness training at the team level and then also individual level that I think any athlete or in our own lives, we can get caught up in that pressure of feeling anxiety about achieving something or doing good enough. You know, think of the student before a big test feeling nervous or an employee having to give a presentation and there's some fear of public speaking. And we know that we do better, and UW athletes and Olympic athletes, they talk about getting into the flow, letting go and getting into the flow. And that really means just being in the moment. When everything is working, breath, stride, movement, and they're totally focused on what they're doing. They're not worried about who's going to post what on social media. They're not worried about what happened earlier in the day or where they're supposed to be tomorrow. The sole focus is on each moment as they experience it. And then regarding the football game, you know, we know that, unfortunately, Alabama stole the show. But, you know, I don't think our athletes have to be discouraged. We get better by playing better teams. And often what can be so wonderful about that is working on your mindset, not getting discouraged, not getting giving up, trying again, and figuring out what can go well in those moments that you can take into the Big Ten season.
Dr. Mergane, what happens when you when your physical body is unable to compete? Badger quarterback Tyler Van Dyke suffered what appears to be a season-ending injury over the weekend. So how would you begin to deal with that? Your body is your machine. It's your go-to, and when it fails you, what happens to your head?
So this is one of my areas of specialization, working in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehab, and I work with a lot of injured athletes from teen all the way to professional. And for some athletes, they are able to return to their sport, and some, as you mentioned, it can be a career-ending injury. I say a few things. First, it's always good as a person to have multiple things that define us. We're really vulnerable if just one thing defines us, like the job we have, or in this case, being an athlete, because if that's taken away, we often can start to fall apart and crumble. And so diversifying what makes us us. And I think, again, for parents listening with kids, it's good to diversify their skill set, get them in a club, have them develop a hobby above and beyond just athletics. And so I think there can be a lot of grief when there's a career-ending injury and the sense of repurposing, who am I now, and starting to put new goals in place. That most of our, you know, teen athletes or even collegiate athletes aren't going pro. It's a wonderful chapter in their life, but it's not the end of the story. So finding other things to work towards is really important. For those athletes that are injured who can return, it's so important to create sport-specific goals of things they're working on within their sport and also getting them involved in their team, maybe as a manager, maybe just attending practice and doing their rehab exercises so they can feel part of the team. I think one of the biggest challenges, lastly, is that when an athlete gets injured, whether it's career-ending or not, they often lose that support network because they're not on the field having those moments with their team. So it's really important to proactively stay connected so you have those friends and that support during this time.
Dr. Shyla Mergane, our guest, taking a look at the Olympic mindset and what we can learn from athletes and their preparation and how they deal with the voices in their head. And we invite you to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. And Dr. Mergane, we now have student athletes in college who can earn income from their name, image, and likeness, and student athletes are now earning money as part of their competition in college sports. Are you seeing an impact in how this is affecting the mental well-being of our student athletes?
I think it just adds another layer of pressure to performance, that there is a fear that they might not get those sponsorship opportunities or they might lose their scholarship. And plus, I think it can also take time with NIL to have those opportunities or seek out those opportunities, and that takes away from practice and certainly schoolwork. So I think athletes are having to juggle more than they used to. But there are also some benefits that come from this too.
The benefits from name, image, likeness would be the ability to actually earn some living as you are competing on behalf of your school. Are there mental health benefits?
I think there could be, you know, in terms of building your brand and reaching more people as well.
Feels like a lot of pressure, though, for a college kid who just got out of high school.
Absolutely. And I think that sometimes athletes are, you know, don't necessarily know how to navigate this new terrain. I think we're all still learning around what is the best way to approach this.
And as you work with student athletes, I imagine, Dr. Mergain, part of the priority is to get these student athletes to grow, to develop, to become their potential, to find their potential. But that growth can come with some discomfort at times. And so do you have advice for getting through this, those uncomfortable parts of growing?
Yeah, and I want to talk about another skill set that athletes use, and that is visualization or mental imagery. Just because you can't do it today doesn't mean you can't tomorrow. And so research has found that mentally rehearsing activity trains the brain for performance. And visualization gives you a mental space to rehearse your performance no matter the activity. And in particular, I'm often working with athletes on a visualization practice called the flick back, flick forward technique. And I did it myself just before starting this interview. So it can be used in a variety of situations. So the flick back is to access a past achievement. And I'm always encouraging my athletes to develop a highlights reel, like something you might see on YouTube of past successes in your mind. And so you can go back in time and access it using all your senses, focusing on a time where you felt good, performed really well, and then remember that feeling. So my example, going back in time to maybe a past time we did an interview or the past time I was on Larry Mueller, and really accessing that. And you can reflect in that visualization on what you've done in the past to succeed. What went well? What were the conditions that fostered your best performance? And try to relive it, almost like virtual reality. You're stepping back in and reliving it with using as many senses. So that's that flick back. And then you flick forward, imagining yourself in the future having the same level of performance or even better, mentally rehearsing that outcome you want and the steps that you took to get there using all your senses. And I think this can be powerful in the moment. Like, let's say you fumbled the ball or there was a turnover, you missed the shot. Then you can use this flick back, flick forward, and access a time where maybe you made a mistake, but you bounce back quickly. And then see yourself again. You made the mistake, but you can see yourself then going forward, bouncing back quickly. And that can be really powerful because you trust your past experiences, the times you're able to bounce back quickly, more than any negative thoughts that might be looming large in your mind.
Flip back, flip forward. And all of this seems to be a way to reorient and re-anchor yourself in the now. And Dr. Mergain, you've talked about this a little bit in our conversation already. Getting in the zone or getting in the flow is another way, at least as I have understood it, to be in the moment, to actually be in the instant that it happens and be a part of that instant before it's gone. And a way to help get into that moment in the flow and the zone is to quick flip back and to quick flip forward and find a past and a future that makes sense to you to help you understand the now that you're experiencing. How does that sound?
I think that sounds I think you summarized it very well.
That makes sense to me.
Very much. And our place of personal power is in focusing on what we want to have happen versus what went wrong. And so having that mindset, again, of focusing on what do I need to do next? What do I need to remember to do? What is that outcome, again, can drive us much more effectively versus the fears of, oh, this happened, or, oh, I'm afraid of failure. That kind of drains us. And I think any athlete that is succeeding at high levels is training in mindfulness, training their brain so they can focus, they can be in their body, and they can attend to the play at hand versus caught up in thinking or anxiety or distraction.
Yeah, I started the conversation with a look at the Alabama perennial powerhouse football team coming to Camp Randall last weekend. But what about the perennial powerhouse of the UW women's volleyball team? What about the pressure of always having to be, at least in the last handful of years, at or near the top of competitive volleyball teams across the country? That's got to be a pressure unlike any other, Dr. Mergain.
Well, I'm glad you're bringing this up, Lee, because I'm actually going to the volleyball game tonight and bringing my daughter. It'll be the first time she's seen the volleyball team.
So awesome,
I'm really excited
at the
for her to see our wonderful female athletes.
Yes.
And they've really gained a following, and there is additional pressure to keep up with past years of that level of success. And I'm glad you brought up the volleyball team, because they have done tremendous training in mindfulness. I think that many of our former volleyball players have really credited mindfulness to helping them keep calm in the face of a lot of tense moments, to really access that core strength and times where they needed that. And I think of just even two practices that can be helpful for all of us. One is using the breath to center ourselves and breathing slower and lower in our body. The breath is a great anchor that can anchor us here and now. So using that breath as we're, breathing in. I usually encourage my athletes to do a 4-6 breath count. So you're breathing in to the belly for a count of 4, and then breathing out for a count of 6. So you're actually lengthening that out breath a little bit, because that's what's calming to the system. And our mind can only focus on one thing. So doing that slower, lower breathing, using that breath to anchor us here and now, can help us get out of our head, back into our body, and focusing on what's next. The other piece that I think has gone really well with our volleyball players and other athletes is using some sort of cue to reset the mind. I know one volleyball player used her ponytail, and when she adjusted her ponytail, it was that cue to say, okay, snap out of it.
Yeah.
Let me get my mind back in the game. What do I need to do? So sometimes having that, have athletes, like a physical gesture, clapping your hand,
yeah,
or you're feeling the softball glove on your hand, or you're looking at the line in the swimming pool. So that kind of anchor can help kind of snap out of whatever your mind is doing, whatever you're worried around, and a reset, so you can move forward more effectively.
Breathe and cue to a reset. Dr. Shyla Mergain, our guest, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Taking your questions as well about what we can learn from the Olympic mindset and apply to our own everyday life. 800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. Peter in Appleton, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Have there been any studies on the post-sports lives of Olympic athletes? Do they achieve at levels higher than the general population because they've learned these traits of dedicating towards a goal?
That is a great question, Peter. What do we know about the post-athletic careers of these Olympic athletes, Dr. Mergain?
Yeah, great question, Peter. And it's probably varied. Some athletes seem to transition well, and it probably depends on the level of visibility they had during their sport and the opportunities. Like I think of Michael Phelps being a commentator during the Olympics, or Simone Biles opening up her own gym and being part of training future athletes. So some athletes have done a nice job of pivoting into the next phase of life. And certainly the key skills of hard work, determination, drive, focus, stick-to-itness serve them well in future endeavors. And we know, there are several examples professionally, or Olympians, where they've had a tremendous impact going forward, especially on young people. And then there are other athletes that have a harder time. Again, so many of our athletes have trained from such a young age, from almost the beginning of their memories, and they don't know anything else. I'm thinking about some of our NFL players that once they retire have a career-ending injury get into addiction, or they make poor financial choices, and there's a lot of despair and despondency. And that's why for any athlete, no matter your level of competition, it's so important. Athletics is one part of you, but there's so much more to you. And I think that's why the NFL now has kind of coaching, financial coaching mm-hmm. for their football players, or even some post-career advice. I know our UW athletes, there's a lot of focus there of after college, what are you going to do? And a lot of support there. And certainly for Olympians as well, that, you know, going for gold is a goal, but then what comes next? And so many of Olympic athletes, right, they're done with their career that they spent their whole lives working towards at what, late 20s, maybe early 30s.
Right.
I think there's occasional
when most
Olympians
of us are getting
40s,
started. Right.
But You're not, you know, what, a quarter of your life is done, maybe a third, but there's a lot of life left. So I think, again, you know, there's importance to student athletes from a young age that academic success is really important to set up possibilities for the future. But great question, Peter.
Yeah, and I appreciate that perspective. And it makes me wonder, Dr. Mergane, is there a point where a drive to succeed or a drive to achieve can get in the way of mental health, that it can be debilitating as opposed to inspiring?
Absolutely. You know, and sometimes parents can fall into the trap of wanting to support their child in their athletic endeavor, but forgetting that there's also more to that child than just how they're succeeding in sports. And burnout is a real phenomenon. I think that's also why you saw both Michael Phelps and Simone Biles take some time off and question whether they wanted to return to their sport just so they could be a human being for a while versus this human doing. And so I think parents also can put a lot of pressure on children to succeed. And sometimes unintentionally, the child is doing the sport to please the parent and worrying about that pressure from the parent and then starting to feel like they're a failure and not good enough.
What does succeed mean? Yeah. Do parents have to ask themselves what success is? And is success a victory and a trophy and, being the VIP, or does success look a little bit different than that for children?
That's such a great thing to highlight, Lee. I think young children is so important to diversify in sports and also other areas, but not just solely focus on one sport for physical health. There's vulnerability to overuse injuries if a child too young is solely doing one sport. But then again, diversifying with other interests and hobbies. And then certainly by the teen years, parents can really foster that growth mindset by focusing less on outcome, whether the child or won or lost, but more on the effort and hard work. And one of the best things a parent can say to a teen or adult athlete is this. They can just say, I love watching you play. I love watching you compete.
That's it.
I love watching you out on the field. So not about how they did, did they win, did they lose, but just enjoying watching your child out there in their arena.
Dr.
And
Shiloh.
That really frees kids. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and provides a path to success regardless of wins or losses. Dr. Shiloh Mergane, our guest, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Still time for your questions and comments about what we can learn from Olympic athletes, student athletes, and how they get their mind ready to compete. Couldn't we all do a little bit of that? 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and this is WPR News. Coming up tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show, house centipedes. Lots of house centipedes. If you've got them in your house, perhaps you'd like to know why. We'll be talking about that tomorrow, and we'll get an insect update from entomologist Phil Pelletieri. That's tomorrow from 11 to 1 here on The Larry Mueller Show. With the time we have left today, we're speaking with Dr. Shiloh Mergane, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And you can join our conversation about the Olympic mindset and how we can apply it to our lives lives at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I should mention that the UW women's volleyball game tonight is not at the Field House. It's at the Kohl Center, and the crowd will be on hand. And it makes me wonder, Dr. Mergane, about how student athletes deal with the crowds that can at sometimes, when things don't go their way, become a little bit unruly, let you know what they're really thinking. How does that start to seep into your mental well-being?
Well, that's such a great question. And yes, it is in the Kohl Center. So I'm glad you you corrected that. So people aren't going to the wrong place and surprised yesterday to notice, oh, it's not at our regular place. So, but there should be a great crowd as a result in the Kohl Center. Yes, we think about things that hook athletes, and it can be external stimuli. It could be the person name calling, or I think of in ice hockey, the opposing.
Sieve.
Right, the sieve, and everyone's pointing and kind of shaming the poor goalie. And athletes need to learn how to tune that out. I think many athletes find that as inner fuel. They get more drive, determination, stick-to-itness when the crowd is heckling them, and they kind of really tap into that inner strength. But I would say for almost all athletes, it's not necessarily the external stimuli, it's the internal noise. Because what can happen if a crowd is heckling you, it can trigger, tap into your own self-doubt. Like, yeah, maybe I am kind of somebody who lets the hockey puck in, or maybe I'm not good enough, or maybe I don't have what it takes, or, oh no, everyone's going to find out that, you know, I'm a fraud, I'm a failure. Those kinds of thoughts are what get hooked. And that's where the athlete works.
But those are just gnats, right? Right, Dr. Mergane?
Just
negative automatic thoughts.
Yep. And again, every level of performance an athlete will have that kind of thought. But I always say, what do you do next? So, and we haven't touched on this. I really encourage athletes just in their own lives to have a coping thought or a mantra or affirmation. And that can be really helpful in those high pressure moments, in those moments where maybe the crowd's heckling or we just made a huge mistake, to give our mind something to focus on to settle. If you think of a dog barking and you give a dog a bone, the dog will settle. The same with our mind. If you give it something to focus on, a coping thought like, you know, I can do this, or I have what it takes.
Give your brain a bone.
Yeah, I always use that word, fail fast. Like, yeah, make the big mistake, get it over quickly, focus on what's next.
The mantra that I have used, Dr. Yeah, don't stress, do your best, forget the rest. That's sort of what I go into it with.
Oh, Lee, let's say that again. Yeah, can you say that again for the audience? Because I think that's a really important one.
Don't stress, do your best, forget the rest. That's it. And that's all you
can
do.
Keeps it simple, right?
Yeah. I can't be Larry Mueller. Only Larry can be Larry Mueller, but I can be me, and I can try to be the best me that I can be, and that's all I can be.
And that really ties to what we have control over is our effort, right? Just like doing our best, showing up, working hard.
Yeah.
Some days it's going to go well, some days not so much, but we do our best. Try not to stress too much, and then,
it's okay at the end of the day, because we're
going
to have to do it again tomorrow.
Right, exactly. Get another opportunity tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And I think have some fun in the journey. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, where Jean in Fond du Lac standing by. Good afternoon, Jean.
Good afternoon. It's really interesting that the subject turned to what it just did about the athletes having to give themselves positive reinforcement, because my comment was going to be that it amazes me that the strength of these kids' psyche, that even if their team is losing by a lot, you know, and I'm sitting there feeling sorry for the poor kids who are having to play out the rest of this game knowing they can't win. How do they keep that motivation and that competitive spirit when the game isn't even competitive anymore?
Right.
I mean, it's just always gotten to me that I don't have what it takes to be an athlete, because I personally wouldn't be able to handle that. I'd walk off the field crying. So
right.
You know,
I can relate to that. And yet you watch the games and you know from sitting at home that there's no way this team can win. And yet there are those players given everything they have left on every play. not something necessarily a lot of us would go out and do, Dr. Mergane. Where does it come from?
Yeah, I think a couple things. Thanks so much, Gene. What a great observation and comment and question. And it's so wonderful to have you as a fan. And maybe that's part of it, right? Our athletes are great role models. You mentioned volleyball, right? We have the young girls as old as how many years? Maybe my daughter will be down there, 2.5, lined up to meet the female athletes. And that they are also showing some good sportsmanship or sportswomanship, that even in the face where you're down by how many points, even in the face of making a huge mistake, that they get back up and give it effort and hard work. And isn't that what sports is about? Isn't that why we feel so inspired by the hero or heroine's journey of the athlete that goes for gold, that it's not so much about that day where they won gold, but the journey along the way? So a place of resilience is doing it for something larger than yourself. So our athletes, that when they're down by a lot, but they're going out and they're going for that play, you know, they're demonstrating something that I think is really a profound human quality. That, you know, maybe we can't control whether we're going to win a game, but we can control how we're showing up. Yeah. And that's something to be admired and something we can all work on and learn from.
And it sounds
and that
like,
makes a difference.
Yeah. And Gene sounds like me. Even though the game is out of reach, we'll still watch because there are still athletes there giving everything they have on every play. And it's still, you know, there's still a story to be told. I am fascinated with it. Got another comment here from Wade in Trempealeau. Wade, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Well, as a long-term meditator, I really appreciate the comments about mindfulness and individual psychology and thinking about how it seems like this discussion is being framed around a lot around the individual psychology, and it is for that each person, which is important, of course, but I'm thinking about at the social level, our whole notion of winning and losing and how kind of crazy that is at times. I'm a bicyclist and I watch the Tour de France and, you know, and in 57 hours of racing and riding, the first and second place might be separated by 2 minutes or, you know, sometimes it's just seconds, and it's just kind of nuts to always say that this person is number one and this person is number two and this person is number three. I've been thinking about the Olympics, and wouldn't it be nice if in the individual sports we said that we'd give 5 gold medals and 5 silver medals, and, you know, or if you're within a certain percentage point, you're a winner too. It's just kind of seems kind of detrimental to our personal psychology in a way that we put such a weight on 1, 2, 3.
It's an interesting perspective, and I've heard it from other athletes as well. I think there was a tennis player who recently gave a graduation speech and said, listen, I may be a world-class champion tennis player, but I've really only won like 52 to 53% of the points I've played. It's really that close and that small of a difference between being the best and just being a tennis player. What about the psychology of winning and losing, Dr. Mergane?
Yeah, Wade, thank you for bringing that up. And we know that, I think of young kids, if they win the game, they win the point, they feel great. Mm-hmm. But if they lose, they're devastated. Mm-hmm. And there can be too much of a focus on this win-loss, your success if you win, your failure if you don't win. And I think that's a detriment. And so I think as a community, you know, fans can celebrate athletes, whether they're winning or losing. I think especially in young athletes or teen athletes, celebrating the small successes along the way, not so much, and just a specific example, if you're driving home with your child and let's say they didn't win the game, there might be silence in the car. You could help them focus on the small success by saying, what's one thing you feel really good about in terms of how you performed? What is one strength, one small step you made that you feel like you want to celebrate and focus there? I have my athletes after each game, after each practice, write down 3 good things that went well, regardless of the outcome, regardless if they won. Because I think, Wade, you bring up a great point that we can get so tied up on placement or our stats or standing that we forget that we're dealing with a whole person, and there's a lot to be celebrated and recognized, even if they didn't win that particular day.
Dr. Shyla Morgane, I feel a little bit of a revelation here, as though we've gone through so much, and yet some of it has started to sink in for me. And I just wanted to go over again some of the things that we can do. One of the things we can do is allow the negative automatic thoughts to come in, but not to dwell on them. Let them move on through. That find techniques to encourage ourselves to do better. And I think you mentioned that, I wrote this down, fear is along for the ride. And you should just acknowledge that fear is part of going somewhere. Place that you haven't gone before. And in order to get into the flow, that means to be in the moment and find the now. And sometimes you need to flip back to a past achievement and flip forward to what you expect for success in order to find yourself in the moment that is the instant. What are some of the other techniques that we've covered here today that I am skipping? Oh, breathe. That's a big one. I like to tell people, don't forget to breathe. It's important.
Absolutely. Taking that mindful pause can be really helpful, or just using some sort of mantra to reset yourself, yeah, to focus on who you are, what you're about, and what you want to achieve. Mm.
Dr. Morgane, I want to thank you so much for sharing your work with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation, and wishing you a great day.
You as well. And it leaves me, you know, thinking at the end of the day, I'm not going to win anything. I'm not going to lose anything. I'm just going to get to the end of the day, and we're going to do it again tomorrow. There's no wins or losses here. Just do your best, as we have done today, and we will try again tomorrow. I want to thank you for being along for the ride today, and everybody that chimed in for the Larry Mueller Show. And I also want to thank the team that makes it possible. And there is a team that makes this every day, and I've seen the work behind the scenes, and I can't thank them enough for what they do for us. Clara Neipert and Joel Pattenaut are our producers. Technical director Jeff Robbins today. He was also helping me with the facts. He was our fact checker today. And our executive director who makes it all possible, Jill Nadeau. Thank you, Jill. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News.